This episode contains vivid descriptions of wildfire behavior, rapid evacuation, near-death experiences, and emotional trauma connected to the 2023 Northwest Territories wildfire. Listener discretion is strongly advised. Welcome back to The Other Side of the Call. Today's drop is something a little different. We're calling it a mini episode, and it's a firsthand wildfire escape story from someone who knows northern fires not just as a lifelong resident, but also as an expert. You're about to hear from my friend Franco Nogarine. He works as a forest planning officer and wildfire modeler in the Northwest Territories. We met back when I used to live in Fort Smith, and we've stayed in touch over social media. In August of 2023, as Fire 52 exploded toward the local highway, Franco, his wife Heidi, and their two cats were forced to flee through conditions no one should ever have to face. What happened on that road? The smoke, the heat, the panic, the split-second survival decisions, and the action of one man named Ray Shields is a story that deserves to be heard from Franco himself. This is a terrifying wildfire escape. This is what it feels like when the sky turns orange. Here's Franco.
I've called Fort Smith my home since 1994, and I live there with my wife Heidi Selzler and our two cats. On Saturday, August 12th, 2023, we left our home from Fort Smith for possibly the last time. We were late getting out relative to the evacuation order. We left that day, as so many others had left Fort Smith before us, and so many others left the previous five community wildfire evacuations in the Northwest Territories before Fort Smith. We were sad, tired, fearful of what may happen to our homes, and worrying for those who we were leaving behind. We drove through some fire, and we made our way to Hay River, and we ended up in the old town of Hay River, and set up our camper at my brother Dario Nogarine's home on Vail Island. I felt at the time that we would all be okay, and I tried to make it into a holiday with family. And for a very short while, that's exactly what it felt like. This is the story of my attempt to get our family out of Hay River on that Sunday night, August 13th, 2023. I began making notes that night because I knew as the adrenaline wore off, the memories would start to change. And I did not want to forget anything. I most especially did not want to forget about the guy that saved our lives that night. On Sunday, we left around 6:30 from Hay River after the official evacuation order was announced. Passing the hospital, the sky took on a familiar glow, kind of like a mixture between blood and orange cream soda, or an orange creamsicle, that kind of gradient in the sky. I saw that and I knew it was going to be a long night no matter what. Once past the junction, I sped up to our agreed absolute traveling speed of 90 clicks. My brother and I had agreed that we wouldn't go any faster because the two cats on board would essentially go crazy and drive us incredibly nuts, especially if we're going to be driving through fire, which is what I thought we would be doing. So we were in my F-150 EcoBoost, pulling my 30-foot camper trailer. And it was a really long affair, and it's not easy to turn around on a sharp-shouldered road, especially when it's windy and the highway is narrow. And so, you know, driving this rig in this situation, it put me further on edge. I was wary because after the evacuations, I had not been able to get my trailer lights working properly, and I've driven through plenty of wildfires, both like mild and scary alike, and I knew that driving at night through the smoke without the proper clearance lights was making things more dangerous. My brother agreed to be my caboose and watch my back to make sure the drivers behind us did not have to cope with my flaky trailer lights. And when we got to the golf course, about 10 clicks out of town, I could see the wind starting to interact with the smoke, and I began to quietly worry. I'm one of those fire science nerds that loves to stand in my fireproof Nomex and watch how the fire moves in extreme circumstances. My wife is an experienced wildfire videographer and seen her own share of crazy fire behavior. It's a mesmerizing phenomenon, and it's hard to forget some of the telltale signs when you've spent enough time just staring and watching it go. We looked at each other and we could see the worry in each other's eyes, and we knew what was coming, and we went into emergency crisis mode. But despite this, Heidi kept shooting with the camera. At this point, it started as a mild trepidation for me, continuing on as other members of the family lived just before Delancey Estates. So as we moved forward at 90 kilometers an hour, I felt they would be safe for some time at least. My brother called me on the cell phone. We still had cell phones working at that point, and asked me to test my taillights. And with no one on the road, I thought it was a great idea. He confirmed the lights were still messed up, and I was too engrossed in the smoke patterns to think of hanging up the phone. So we stayed on the phone. As we drove past the garden road at 6:33 p.m., I was seeing the wind-gust interactions again, and I became very alarmed. I told myself the glow was probably mostly sunlight obscured by smoke. I think I wanted very badly to believe that. I think my brother must have been watching the sky too, because he did not hang up either. Passing by Patterson's sawmill at 6:37, I knew without a doubt it was not the sun. And I now started looking at the road and thinking of how I might consider turning this thing around. But I said nothing, not further wanting to worry Heidi, and I kept on going, wanting nothing more than get my family out of harm's way. We kept on going, nothing in front, and my brother's reassuring headlights in my trailer mirror, and I knew he was still on the line. When I got a little closer, I could see the brake lights of a pickup trailer and a big rig. It looked bigger than mine, and I stopped, and next to it was a truck with flashers on and a light bar on full. I warned my brother, and I started to slow down. I was focusing on the vehicles, and I was concerned that this was an accident at the worst possible place at the worst possible time. I was not watching the glow as we pulled up. Neither was the elderly man that was standing there frantically trying to tell the driver ahead something. As we pulled up close, the folks in front started to move forward, and I was unsure why at that moment. The elderly man immediately began to tell me that the fire was just around the next two corners and that I had to turn around and go back. I didn't know how, but I recognized this man from Fort Smith from many years prior. It was Ray. He was older than I remembered him, but I remembered his voice and I remembered his eyes, and my brother later confirmed that it was Ray. I immediately told him he needed to turn off the light bar because it was blinding folks and they could not see his flashers. And Ray said, "Oh, I'm sorry," and he turned around and he got back in his truck and turned off his light. At that moment, a dark pickup seemed to pull out and pass my brother, and then it passed me, and it raced on ahead. And as the camper folks ahead of us pulled over on the right to start a huge turn, Fire 52 rounded the corner, whipping like a tail, and the dark pickup roared around the camper and drove straight into the inferno. I believed at that moment I just watched someone burn alive. I was crushed. My Heidi kind of screamed, and I think I blurted out some profanity, and then Ray was back at my window, the flames behind him in the distance. He was determined his mission was to make me go back, and I told him, "I work for Environment and Natural Resources, I know wildfires, and I'm turning around as soon as that trailer in front of us lets me go, I promise," I told him, and I said, "Please get back in your truck and get out of here." He insisted he needed to warn people. And Heidi sort of screamed at him that he needed to get back in his truck or go or he would die. I said go, stop them further up. But now he was watching the trailer turn around as the fire bore down on them, and he was worried, and so was I. And as the driver made the last points of his 40-point turn on the highway, I yelled at Ray again to go, and I promised I would turn and get out. And as the trailer came back and passed me, going towards safety, I saw the smoke start to spin. It was a red flag, something that normally for me would get me excited. and it was a premonition of what would come next. I screamed at my brother. He was still on the phone. I screamed at him to turn around and get out as fast as he could. And so I continued forward away from Ray and the other camper congested behind me. And I slowed to start my own 40-point turn. The fire seemed to just suck back. It almost looked tame for a millisecond. And I thought, maybe this is my window. The next parts happened so fast, I could not tell you how long it took. This was at 6:40 p.m. Heidi wisely at this point put her camera down and held on for her life. I felt this was my last chance. And so I turned down into the ditch and backed out, taking a huge chunk out of my turn. But now I was fully across the highway with the front and the nose of the truck down in the north ditch, straddling the highway with the whole truck and camper affair and my trailer hanging off the road on the south ditch. And we were completely vulnerable from either side. At that moment, everything went pitch brown. I could not even see the hood of my truck. In my mind, I knew we were either dead or we were going to be on fire very soon. Then I felt the wind try to flip everything over, and the debris started smashing into the truck like a sideways hailstorm. And in the blackness, my instincts must have taken over and rolled down my window, and I floored the truck, cranking hard without even seeing where I was going. I dragged my trailer down into the ditch, pressing on the accelerator as hard as I could on the floor, breathing in huge lungfuls of smoke. Still totally blind, I could feel the traction start to improve as we sped up. Still blind, I could feel the left side of my truck tilting up, and I knew I was climbing on the left shoulder and getting out of the ditch. At that moment, my left arm was out the window, and I felt my skin start to burn. Still blind, looking forward, I looked in the mirror. I could see the fire behind me like a tornado. It formed right on the highway, as both sides of the highway were now fully involved and they were crowning. The tops of the trees were burning at extreme intensity and contributing to this massive fire whirl in the middle of the highway. The air and the smoke between us on the highway had formed a vortex and was sucking the crowning flames into it, creating this fire tornado, and it was right behind me. And I remember thinking this thing was trying to kill us and eat us all. As I raced, still driving like a madman, pulling out of the ditch, still blinded by smoke, still coughing, choking, I got up on over the shoulder onto the pavement, gaining speed. I don't know how it was possible. I did not hit a power pole. I did not hit a sign. I did not hit a telco box or anything, but I didn't. As my tires caught solid pavement, I accelerated as fast as my truck could go until the smoke was gone. And out of nowhere, inches to my left, almost touching, was Ray's truck right beside me. His white pickup racing out of the smoke was like we were neck and neck. I waved him off because he didn't know I was there. He realized and he saw me and he veered away to give me room. I could still see the fire behind me, but I could not feel it on my arm anymore. And I realized I'd been breathing the smoke the entire time and I started coughing a lot. Ray sped off and I slowed down to 60, knowing what was coming next. I yelled once more into my phone and I told my brother, go to our families just out of Delancey. I knew they were stubborn. And I told him, make sure they leave. Don't take no for an answer. Make them go to the beach. That's the emergency safety zone. Take them and go now. I said, make sure you don't argue. Just make them go. This fire's going to eat everything in its path. At this point, I told Heidi that I thought we were going to die back there. I was shaking. And as I looked up, I saw the endless line of cars coming towards the fire. And the tears started to run down my face. I just looked and saw all those people, and I just said, how are those people going to turn around? How are they going to stop before that fire gets here? I had zero answers, and I had all the fear you don't want to have. And then, out of nowhere, there was Ray again. He had pulled over, trying to get people to turn around. He used a rest stop. Crazy genius. But the fire was still coming, and the vehicles were endless. And my mind told me they were all going to burn. And Heidi just screamed at me to stay on the horn the whole way. And so, with my flashers on, alternating with my right hand between flashing my high beams and waving my arm outside the window, I slowed to 60, drove right across the center line, hoping that people would at least be wary of a vehicle not staying in its own lane. And I hung myself out that window, laying on the horn and waving in an exaggerated turnaround motion, breathing in more smoke, screaming at the top of my lungs, "Go back or you'll die." Trying to catch the eye of every driver, exaggerating my lip movements in hope that I would help them understand. Then checking the rearview mirror to see if they braked. Many did, but not all. And I worried that Ray and the turnaround would be overwhelmed. That made me try harder, screaming out the window like a crazy man. And I was openly sobbing as my subconscious mind started doing the math of how many people might die tonight. And then I saw something that just took my breath away. Two fire trucks. Not the kind that drive into wildfires, the kind that get eaten by wildfires. They were municipal fire trucks. I got my start as a volunteerman in the Hay River Fire Department. And so the thought of my alumni going into that wildfire, thinking they were going somewhere to help someone with some kind of fire. Just the thought of that and them perishing, it was devastating. And it was so much all at once. I was so angry and frustrated, I smashed my fist on the wheel and I screamed at the universe. Why the hell would they send fire trucks? No one answered. Like I said, I started my fire career as a volunteer firefighter, so I knew a lot of those guys and those gals. Yeah, it was crazy. I couldn't believe that they would all die in vain. I screamed again. This time I screamed at Heidi to dial 911. She did so immediately, and I tried to calm myself so that I could try and talk on the phone. Yeah, I got the dispatch. I asked for Hay River RCMP, and I said, people are going to die in the fire. And like lightning, I was on with the RCMP in Hay River. As I spoke, I continued to wave my arms and try to tell people to turn around, as I very quickly explained on the phone who I was, what my credentials were, in hopes that this would somehow expedite my request or give me some form of credibility so someone would take me seriously. And I begged them to put a unit on the highway at the junction to stop any more people from driving into the fire. And the poor woman on the line, she knew I was right. And I rattled off what was going to happen if she did not send help. And then she told me in a voice that was hard to describe, "I'm sorry, but we don't have any units left to send." They all responded to the car fire out there. It seemed like an eternity between the moment she said that and the thing in my brain that clicked. Car fire? My heart sunk again, and I thought of Ray trying to save all those people. A car fire. That meant Fire 52 had gotten somebody. And it felt just like I let all those people, including Ray, die. I began to sob. I knew I could do no good on the phone. So I thanked the dispatcher and I told her I was going to hang up and let her do her job. I thanked her for everything she was doing and I hung up. I started to see less evacuees and more emergency vehicles, but in my state, my arm didn't care and my brain didn't care. I kept screaming, I kept waving, trying to stop people and tell them to turn around. I'm pretty sure quite a few EMS folks probably thought I was some kind of a nut job hanging out of the window like that. Eventually, I saw them blocking the road behind me. And that brought a huge feeling of relief. I didn't dare take a breath. And then I started to see the lights line up behind me. A nice long stream of car lights. And then I breathed. And that resulted in me pretty much coughing until I couldn't see anymore. But I kept going. I immediately thought about those behind me that Ray had to have turned around. There were so many people behind me now than before. And it was only me before. And I thought, all those people, Ray saved all those people. And I quickly resolved to do the best I could to warn as many more people as I could on the way, to lighten the load for those that were behind me trying to turn them all around. I think I was in shock for the rest of the drive, all the way to the beach, to the escape zone. We were welcomed there by other evacuees who were already camping in the group camping area. In shock, I parked my truck and I walked around in a daze. A kind fellow, Rod, took me aside and talked me down. I could barely speak the rest of the night. And at the beach, the sunset was so beautiful you could almost forget what was actually happening out at Patterson's Mill. I think we barely escaped within millimeters of our lives. But we were alive because of Ray. There are many horror stories that happened on the highway that night. Not my stories to tell. Some fared better than me, and some fared much, much worse. But as the stories of destruction and near death mounted, I took note. Not one human life was lost, reported. Impossible, and that ate at my mind. It took Monday and Tuesday for the adrenaline to leave my system and for my hands to stop shaking. And when they did, all I could think of was that Ray had saved my family and selflessly saved so many. I knew that what I would do would be what was necessary to see that the man was recognized for the hero that he was. Ray Shields, you are one crazy son of a bitch. Thank God for that. You saved my wife, my brother, and my life. You probably saved 100 people with that crazy stunt you pulled on the highway at Patterson's as Fire 52 tried to eat all of us alive. So many of those people probably don't even know you saved them or who you are, but you did, and I know your name. Tuesday night in Hay River at the beach in the emergency evacuation zone. We all waited for Fire 52 to come and burn Hay River to the ground, while Fire 69 was doing the same thing in Fort Smith, eating Salt River as an appetizer, getting ready to consume the main course. My home, Fort Smith. We sat, and we hoped beyond hope that maybe somehow we'll get out. And that night, as I thought about how my home of Fort Smith was about to burn down, and tried to come to terms with letting everything go, a Fort Smith resident posted on Facebook that it was raining. Raining. At the very last minute. At the very last possible minute. Another miracle. And my mind was not handling the roller coaster very well. And as I watched the storm above me, I felt despair because it was not raining. In fact, it wasn't just not raining. It was making dry lightning, and it was striking everywhere. And it was dry and hot. And I felt another pang, thinking all the new fires this would start and how hopeless stopping this madness would be without real rain. And then, just over the lake, through the sunset, you could see the rain. And it came closer and closer and closer. And when it hit, I was standing there in my clothes outside watching the sky, and it came down on my face so hard. And so did my tears. Tears of joy. I ran to my camper to put my jacket on, and as I slipped the sleeve of my raincoat on, it began to hail. Huge hail. And Heidi, soaked, covered in hail, came running in, covering her head as the hail intensified into a roar on our camper. And we looked at each other, both crying and laughing hysterically. And the more we laughed, the harder the hail came, and the harder we laughed. It had battered against us for an hour and a half, and finally it was over. There was nearly 2 inches of hail everywhere. And the important thing was that it on us and on the fire. I slept that night, knowing that the hail was our ticket out, and I planned our next escape in the morning, and I fell asleep with a smile. So we finally got out of Hay River on August 15th, driving through the carnage that Fire 52 left in its wake. The burnt vehicles, the animals, the community, homes, businesses, all destroyed. And this time we drove through the fire and it was asleep. There was only one spot of open flame and so much devastation. We ended up evacuating all the way to high level. We registered at the evacuation center, and I was overjoyed to find out from Troy, Ray's son, that Ray had made it out safe. And that's karma. From high level, we tried to follow the evacuation guidelines and stayed as long as we could until the smoke came. And a few days later, the smoke came and we had to move on to Manning. We ran out of luck when we got to Manning because there was nothing there for us. They were already overflowing with the Fox Lake evacuees that had been there since May from the devastating fire that caused them to evacuate. So they turned us away and they felt horrible. The volunteers tried to give me money from their pockets. That hit me really hard. Again, it made me cry. Cried more in that week than I did in my whole life. We could not take their money. I couldn't. Not with so many people who needed help. We were in great shape. We moved on, frustrated and not quite sure what to do. Then the irony hit me that I actually knew what to do. We would go to the ironically named Glowing Embers RV Park in Atchison. We had stayed there before on a wild Western Canada RV adventure back in 2013. We rolled into the RV park at dark, nearly 11, our nerves ragged, physically exhausted. The map and the arrival instructions were not clear. We were all brutally traumatized. There was confusion. There was anger. And then heated words. In that moment, everybody's damage came out, and we all began to argue and scream. Heidi and I, Dario and I, we all fell into old shitty routines. At one point, I just yelled at everyone to shut up and let me think. It was ugly and it was raw, and it made me feel lower than a worm to dump my anger. I did everything I could to calm down. We finally found our stall, and at 11:30, stall number 39 became our home for the foreseeable future. And at that moment, I was thinking possibly, potentially our last. We were all exhausted beyond rationality, and by now we knew that that momentary rain that let us escape didn't put any fires out, but it let us escape. We were all exhausted beyond rationality. Yet somehow we managed to set up camp in the dark and not kill each other. By morning, it was forgotten, and we had all made our apologies and hugged. That week, Heidi's long-estranged cousins, Mandy and Trish, kept apart since childhood by family circumstances, refused to let a silly thing like an evacuation stop the reunion that those girls had had planned for our home in Fort Smith. And they drove all the way from Ontario and came right to the park to us. Monday was the reunion, and it was beautiful to behold. Tears flowed, smiles abound, and the stories went. One afternoon, while the girls let Heidi nap, both cousins stayed with her and slept with her. Same bed, all three, like when they were little. That was moving in ways I couldn't describe, seeing her cuddled and protected, surrounded by family love. And family love was not something she ever really got from her own family, so this was a first. Things were good, until my brother went back. Twice. Behind the fire line to save his town and our homes. I was so angry and so proud at the same time, and I can't deny that I saw my young self in him and recognized he was coming into his own, carrying himself like a hero without trying to be one or without looking for attention. So we would have those long goodbyes that nobody wanted to end. And then he would drive off in his pickup and go back to that fucking fire that tried to kill us. Yeah. The days blurred. I had a Starlink. Somehow I managed to smartly throw that thing in the back of the camper one day without even thinking about it. And next thing you know, we're evacuated and there's no communications anywhere. And wow, I have a Starlink in my camper. I set it up and I got connected to infrastructure, federal and territorial, Alberta, Parks Canada, set up a modeling workstation in my camper. The days blurred, modeling fires, supporting the teams, shopping, living. The fires got crazier, the days got hotter. Late in the afternoon of September 2nd, one of the fires north of Hay River jumped the highway and all hell broke loose. And it was maddening being unable to do anything but watch dots move on a map. And they didn't move very quickly. They didn't move sometimes for hours. It was maddening. On September 9th, we played a benefit concert in Edmonton for evacuees. It was a wild and wonderful night with a tinge of bitter disappointment for me. I held my head high and I was proud to give a little to give to evacuees. And then I discovered that the evacuees our concert was benefiting was us. And I thought I was helping others, and I was actually helping us. I took a cut of the money, but I didn't feel good about it at all. On September 14th, the Fort Smith conditions were stable enough to call us home. And on the 15th, we started driving home. On the 17th, we smiled all the way to Enterprise, and we got to witness a complete and total devastation. Pets, animals, vehicles, homes, businesses, all burned. Seeing it again re-triggered us all. Re-triggered us both, sorry. September 18th was home day. We left my brothers in Hay River and headed to Fort Smith. Witnessing even more forest cooked like by plasma. Trees bent right over, like they all bowed down and froze there. I'd never seen anything like it. Some of the wildest, craziest fire behavior evidence I've ever seen I saw on that highway coming home from Edmonton. We arrived home about 8:30 p.m. I looked at the odometer. We drove 4,750 kilometers, 38 days of evacuation. And I had so many more gray hairs than I had when I left. I've spent a lot of time counseling, therapy, soul searching, processing, walking through back all the good things that happened during this trip. During this evacuation actually really helped me to add some balance to what felt like an overwhelming weight. And I like to think it helped me even out the things that still hurt. I won't lie, I can't talk about this. I can't talk about this yet and not be emotional and not be overwhelmed. And I'm better than most. I'm in a better situation than most in terms of my ability to speak about it and talk about the trauma. But when I talk about this, most times I have to stop. So much of it hits me hard that it makes me weep. And a lot of times I wonder how long it'll be like this. How many years will it take? Our home was as we left it, only safer. The responders had removed flammable gas cans and things like that from our main property and put stuff out by the road so that if fire swept through the community that it wouldn't make it any worse. Let them burn on the road instead of burn by your house. This was the thinking, and I approve. Everything that was intact. Everything stunk like smoke. But it wasn't bad in our house, as nothing, like no windows were left open. So, there are some things that I want people to know. I've said this so many times, but I will say it again. When it's time to go, don't argue. Don't be smart. Don't try to work around it. Make it happen. Stuff is not family. Stuff is not love. Stuff is not going to love you back. So when the evacuation order comes, you take it. You go. And you do your best. The absolute miracle of the Northwest Territory wildfires of 2023 is that nobody died. Like, more than half of the territory pretty much evacuated from all that fire and all the things that happened, everything that burnt, nobody died. That's something. And that, above all else, tells me that every minute of worry and suffering is worth it. To say that nobody died, when so many could have. I would like to thank Amelia and the team for inviting me to speak here on the other side of the call. The process was much harder than I expected, but I feel like it was well worth it. I feel like I've taken my nightmare and put it into a nice binder, labeled it, and put it on the shelf where I can revisit it if I need to. It's not exactly closure, but a step in that direction, and most assuredly a weight off my shoulders. Lastly, you guys are doing very important work, and I'm honored to be a part of it. Thank you for having me.
Franco, my friend, thank you for sharing that with us and for revisiting something that still carries weight for you and for Heidi. Your honesty brings a human perspective to the 2023 wildfires that data, maps, and news coverage could never capture. To Ray Shields and to the wildfire crews, dispatchers, RCMP members, volunteers, and community responders who fought Fire 52 and helped people get out, thank you. Before we close, I want to take a moment to honor the people who carried the weight of the 2023 Northwest Territories wildfires. The wildfire crews, the dispatchers, the pilots, the heavy equipment operators, the RCMP members, the volunteers, and the neighbors who helped their neighbors when there was no time left to hesitate. This isn't just about escaping fire. It's about the people who run towards it, the people who stand between a fire and the community they love, and they keep going long after cameras leave. If you've got someone in your life who worked the 2023 fire season, or someone who was evacuated, lost a home, or lost their sense of safety, reach out, check in. Let them know their experience matters. You're not alone, and we are listening. If today's episode resonated with you, we would love for you to share it with someone who might benefit from it. Please rate and review the show to help others find us. The more these conversations travel, the more families and first responders can find help and reach across Canada. If it keeps you here, let's talk about it. Don't let the conversation stop here. Follow us at TOSOPOD on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. That's at TOSOPOD. There you'll find new episodes, behind-the-scenes clips, and ways to get involved. Share this episode with one person who needs to hear it and help us keep these critical conversations alive.
So one of the things that is important to do when you have been listening to someone else's story that might be resonating with your own is to recognize that your nervous system might be activated. What we need you to do is to try out these different skills from time to time, especially after listening to this podcast. We want you to just get up and shake your body out, just like we see primal animals do after the hunt or after they escaped a predator. You often see them do this body shake. So just get up and shake your body. Shake your arms out, shake them above your head, shake them down your body, shake your legs individually. Nobody's watching. It's gonna feel silly, but it does actually release the tension that your body is trying to do because it feels that threat. So just get up and do some shakes. Shake it, shake it, shake it.
Or if you're hanging out.